Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
ESNY. How's it going, guys? After over a month on the shelf, thanks to me being stuck in Knicks limbo covering that for ESNY and just needing a general break from sports Twitter, Bleacher Creatures is back with episode 160, an official relaunch brought to you as always by XL Media, Crossing Broad, Elite Sports NY, Warwick Gaming, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. Alec, what's good, man?
Not much.
Are you ready for future Rangers coach Peter Laviolette?
I'm gonna like vomit. Oh God,
dude! Like, what is it about? Someone needs to do something at the Athletic about just how the coaching hiring process in the NHL. Every so often, like a guy like Dave Quinn might come in and succeed moderately, but for the most part, it's retread after retread after retread, and then the rest of the time, and then otherwise, it's okay. Let's either risk this assistant or this ex player and hope they hit as well.
Yeah, it's an old boys club. That's all the NHL is. It's an old boys club from management, like from general managers to head coaches. You know, if you're in the door once, you're never leaving. And it's annoying because you're never going to see really intriguing options step up. And, you know, like a good example of a guy who is doing well, or a couple guys where, you know, they were kind of out of the box hires, if you think about it, and they've had really good success. Jim Montgomery with Boston and, you know, like Rod Brind'Amour. You know, Brind'Amour has that like history of being a player for the Canes and you know, is, I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but like a borderline Hall of Famer. Like, so he was
a household name at some point.
Yeah, he was always going to have that kind of inside track for a job, but like he brought, like I don't mind when ex-players get a coaching gig because you'll get a Brind'Amour or you'll get like a, you know, Marty St. Louis.
Brind'Amour is also like, God, we're like, this is a Yankees podcast. We're talking hockey. Jeez. No, but Rod Brind'Amour, he's a good hire because he just doesn't have that experience as a player. He's got that experience as a player in Carolina.
Yeah.
So he knows the fans. He knows what they expect. He knows what works there. And is enough of a student of the game to make adjustments accordingly. I mean, I don't know how good he is as, let's say, a talent evaluator or a communicator, but he's doing enough in Carolina to get the team to respond to him. Now, would that work on another team? We don't know. But
but
like you just said, he's got that experience not just as a player, but in Carolina specifically.
Yeah, there are about, yeah, there's probably less than five head coaches in the NHL who can be considered elite coaches. And then everyone else are just part of the same tier. You know, if the Rangers hire Peter Laviolette, you know what? He's not really going to, you know, move the needle much more than what Gerard Gallant was. And Gerard Gallant wasn't going to move the needle as much as, you know, I know I'm skipping over David Quinn here, but he wasn't going to move the needle as much as like Alain Vigneault. Like they're all the same mold of coaches, and you know they've been around for a long time, and they're just stubborn to change in an ever evolving game. And you know that's what happened when the Rangers got knocked out of the first round by the Devils after being up fucking 2-0 and shoving those games down the Devils' throat. You know, like, and what happened? Lindy Ruff, credit to him, as terrible he was with New York and as terrible he was with those first two games, he made adjustments and put the onus on Gallant to adjust, and Gallant didn't. There are a lot of coaches in the NHL like that, and a guy like Peter Laviolette, if he becomes the Rangers head coach, like I would have liked to see that Carberry dude from Toronto, or
yeah, Spencer Carberry.
Yeah, so yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, look at we'll put a pin on it this way. Laviolette the way I see it, like at best he might be that sort of Joe Torre to Gallant's pugnacious Buck Showalter. Because say what you want about Laviolette. Yeah, he's another retread. He's an absolute journeyman. He hasn't gotten past the second round in forever. But he's an ex-Ranger. Guys like playing for him. He wouldn't still be getting jobs if that wasn't the case.
Yeah. He's got experience with big time talent.
Yeah.
With his time in Washington. So, but I don't know, man. Like, hockey is like maybe the greatest sport in the world, and the NHL is the worst run league in the world. It's a joke.
You're saying it's worse than the KHL?
Well, I mean,
gotcha.
Russia shit aside.
Yeah. But anyway, in Yankees who's shifting back, before getting anything, how about a nice round of applause? Aaron Hicks is finally gone. Brian Cashman finally doing what he should have done. I don't know, probably at some point last year, and just DFA'd him. Now he's the Orioles problem. But Alec, I gotta hand it. We gotta give credit where it's due. Hicks, when he got cut, he'd been playing pretty well. Like he finally, I don't know whether to say he was turning a corner, but he'd found something, so that he was just seeing the ball better.
Yeah, yeah. It was like what he was on a stretch of, I think, less than 10 games or so, where he was starting to put together some better at bats, hit the ball a little harder.
It was like a 5-7 game stretch, I'd say. Yeah.
So, I mean, has he gotten any action with the O's yet?
Yeah, he had two hits in his first game with them.
Of course he did. He's going to be called a 270 hitter. yeah, I mean, like, I've wasted so much breath on Aaron Hicks. It's like, good riddance, good luck. You know,
He's kind of like bizarro Ozzie Cabrera in that you want him to so badly to do well, because you could see he's trying so hard, but then like got to the point where, okay, wish in one hand, shit in the other, see what happens first.
Yeah, but like, you know, I feel like if you want to study how a player should react and versus how he shouldn't react when they're in a situation like that, is, and I know you and I have talked about this like privately, is look at the way Hicks handled the demotion, the lack of playing time, and compare it to like how Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've had our criticisms of both players, well documented on this podcast, and well documented in our group chats. But I mean, like, credit to where credit's due. IKF never, you know, complained about playing time and saying, I'm a starter, I should be starting, and then, you know, go out there and suck. He kept his mouth shut and he worked hard. He was asked to play an entirely new position, and he's done a really good job. And I'm like, what? He was on fire in the Seattle series.
He was, and I actually wrote about this the other day, Alec. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, it almost kind of speaks as to between him and Hicks. Okay, Hicks got demoted. Didn't change his preparation. He was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to keep doing my thing. Something will happen when I play, and slowly but surely, I'll get back on the field, and that'll be that. Yeah. IKF was like, okay, this is my role. What do I need to focus on so that I am at the highest value in this role? Okay, so he adds almost 20 pounds of muscle in the offseason. He's making a lot more hard contact, especially as of late. He was, I think, in the four-hit game he had against Seattle. I did the math of this. The average expected batting average on all of those hits was 477.
Okay.
So he's putting the ball in play. He's hitting the ball hard. Yesterday, even when the Yankees lost 1-0, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa had the farthest hit ball out of anybody on the team.
Yeah. I know exactly what a bat you're talking about, because he put a ride on that one.
Yeah. And so right now I think he understands, okay, Harrison Bader, he's going to be out for a couple weeks. Greg Allen's here, but I'm still going to be needed, just because even with Donaldson coming back, you don't think they're going to like make him an everyday player from the get-go. So yeah, he's going to get outfield reps. He's going to get infield reps. And it's clear, like, okay, what does this team need me to do? This team needs me, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, to make hard contact.
Mm-hmm.
They need me to come up at bat and like just hit the ball hard regardless of result. And unlike last year when, okay, like the problem with IKF last year is that, okay, he had one good month and otherwise was a weak singles hitter, didn't have any pop in the ball. But you can see now he's making more hard contact. He's prioritizing exit velocity, bat to ball skills. Like he's swinging at some more bad pitches, but you can tell he's more confident at the plate. He's more focused and knows just what he can do.
Yeah. And like, you know, let's not forget, this is a dude who, you know, had 170 hits in 2021 and batted 270, right? He probably got like, you know, a little gun shy in his first season in New York and then kind of was feeling the pressure as humans do in a pressure cooker like the Bronx.
Yeah.
You know, it like, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying we're going to get him back to once, you know, 170 hits in a season, but, you know, he had a pretty decent finish to last year where, you know, he's got that average up to 260. And right now he's batting, you know, a shade under 240. So
in the month of May, his OPS was, I think, over eight, was like close to 850.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So if that final form of IKF last year and, you know, and if this kind of steadiness, I think we can call it, he's just been steady on both sides of the ball. If we get that from him for the rest of the season, then that's perfectly fine for your bottom half of the lineup. Again,
I mean,
part of the issue with a guy like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa last year in the beginning of this year was that you weren't getting production out of him, Hicks, and Donaldson and Kyle Higashioka simultaneously. So having the four of those black holes in the lineup, that was a major issue. But you get rid of the black hole that was Hicks. You got Kiner-Falefa steadying out in a big way. We'll see what Donaldson has when he comes back.
He hit over 300 on his rehab assignment, so we'll see.
But you know, then again, Esteban Florial is, you know, Babe Ruth down there right now, and
right, yeah.
So you never know when he comes back up and he's facing major league pitching. But like you cut off a weak link in Hicks. Now you can start seeing, hey, if we can get a little bit more steadiness out of a guy like Donaldson and compare that with what IKF is bringing, then the lineup gets a little bit more deep. And you start seeing that offensive consistency. Like, you know, tip your cap to George Kirby. What was his first name?
George Kirby yesterday. Yeah, had so, everything working.
Yeah, tip the captain. That dude was throwing BBs and he was spotting up. Like,
I looked at his Fangraphs page right before his start. His soft contact this year alone, I think at this stage of the season, and compared to all of last year, his soft contact, I want to say, is up close to 5 points. I believe going into last night's start, his soft contact rate was at or about, I want to say, like 21.6%.
Yeah.
That's a literal dream as a manager for a starter who is there to eat innings.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I you know, this past week or so, they went toe-to-toe with, like, I know they were struggling, but like the San Diego Padres who have as much potential in the offensive side of baseball as any.
Oh, yeah.
The Yankees went toe-to-toe with them. And then you go into Seattle, who has a very good pitching staff, and you put up, you know, big runs in two of the games, and then, you know, baseball happens and you lose 1-0 in the 10th inning. Like,
I mean, like this whole series, I thought, Alec, was like, because we try so hard to be excited for the Mariners every year, right?
Yeah.
Because they're one of those teams where they, you know, they can do it, they just can't execute for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And you see it in this series. Okay, they have a top 10 pitching staff, but sure enough, they're all fastball dominant. Yankees feasted on not just Bryce Miller, who, let's be honest, I looked at his game log, I thought he was going to get roasted from the get-go. Mm-hmm. But I thought the Yankees would beat Logan Gilbert, just not beat up on him.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show, like, okay, these Seattle Mariners, yeah, they're a very good team, but they're also still a very young team. And right now, there's some growing pains going on, especially at the plate. I mean, just Julio Rodriguez alone, twice basically killed, even though they were down big, he pretty much killed two Mariners rallies because he was thinking breaking ball and got frozen with a fastball at the knees. Not once, but twice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, Seattle was a team that you want to see succeed. You know, they always have had a good fan base, and, you know, some of the biggest names in the last 30 years of baseball have come through Seattle. But yeah, you know, they're not ready to take the reins of the AL West yet, but, you know, I like their chances more than I like the Angels. So,
yeah, the Angels are just a dumpster fire. I mean, like, the Mariners, you don't want to say Scott Service is the problem, but I feel like they're kind of becoming almost like the American League's version of the Brewers, where, yeah, they've got that great team and they've got a good core of young players, and the Brewers don't have a Julio Rodriguez type player yet. I mean, like, maybe what's his face, the center fielder who got hurt now for the season, maybe he's that guy for them at some point. Mm-hmm. Garrett Mitchell, yeah, I'm sorry. But at the same time, you got to wonder, like, is Scott Service almost that Craig Counsell type where, okay, the team has a bunch of talent, but there's too many nice guys, and you need to sort of add that fuck you factor.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it was like Jeff Nelson was saying a bunch, might have been game two. You know, I think a team like Seattle, they just get in the way of themselves.
Yeah. So. Jeff Nelson's actually been half decent in the Yes booth, too.
Yeah, he hasn't been bad. Yeah. I thought it was pretty funny when was it Miller, or was it game one where he called Miller not a big guy at 6'2"? And Michael Kay was like incredulous, like, what? And Nelson's like, yeah, well, like, I'm 6'6", so
yeah,
anyone not as tall as me is a small guy. And
that's my true.
6 foot ass is sitting there like, God damn it.
my 6'1" ass too. Anyway, but the Yankees, they're in third place right now, about 5 games back. But even so, Alec, you got to think, you don't want to say the Yankees are playing with house money, but they're in a position now with Stanton, Donaldson, and Tommy Canley coming back. You got to figure in August, you're going to get Carlos Rodon and maybe Frankie Montas. This team is, unlike last year, it's primed to do most of its damage in the second half.
Yeah, that's always the benefit of a slower start compared to the blistering start they got out with last year.
Yeah.
And a thing, too, is, you know, outside of Tampa, who we'll get to probably in a second, yeah, but like a team like Baltimore hasn't quite been here yet. And as the dog days of summer start to unfold and the season really becomes that grind, you know, I like the position that the Yankees are in because they're an experienced ball club. I'm not saying that Baltimore has, you know, quote unquote, blown their load in the first half of the season or the first quarter of the season, because I do think Baltimore is a very good team.
Yeah.
But we've seen it over the last month or so that the Yankees have been closing that gap between them and the top teams of the AL East. And a perfect example on the reverse side is we've seen Toronto fade and struggle.
Just for good measure, shut the fuck up, Vladdy.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he had like a double or like a home run that entire Blue Jays series. Dude, what a joke team.
Yeah, yeah. I have, like, yeah, Toronto is a...
As Danny Small would say, the fraud Jays, the blue frauds.
Something like that. Like, the whole bullshit about, did Aaron Judge cheat because he looked to his right?
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
Toronto media was just bitter because it was coming off the heels of a disappointing second round by the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, yeah. Who they fired, oh, what's his face? He's now in the Penguins. Christ.
Oh, wait. Did Dubas actually join the Penguins?
Yeah, like 4 hours ago.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, majorly, oh, shit. Chris Drury should be shitting his pants.
No, actually, you know what this could mean?
What's that? Sorry
for all the listeners, that as we get back to Rangers hockey, Dubas might axe Sullivan.
Oh, Sully. Yeah, you're right.
And if Sullivan gets axed, hello.
Yeah, that's true. So. Yeah, yeah. I mean, all reports have said that if Sullivan became available, he would like rocket to the top of the list. But they're apparently preparing to announce Lavi like as soon as tomorrow, I think.
How disappointing.
Yeah, we'll see. How disappointing. But you mentioned the Orioles, dude. Let's actually compare them with the Rays, because the Orioles, like they, you said, yes, they do have a very good team. Gunnar Henderson, once he finds his stroke and sort of like slows down the game for himself at the plate, really excited to see what he has going for him. Yeah. Grayson Rodriguez, they rushed him this year. Like he probably shouldn't have come up until after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like if you look at that entire Orioles lineup, yeah, it's not a sexy team on paper, but that's just a testament to how good Brandon Hyde is. And even in the Yankee series, okay, did they win 2 out of 3? Yeah, they did. But let's look at what happened. All right, against Nestor Cortez, you had a freak inning. Congratulations. And you caught Jimmy Cordero on a night when he had nothing. You won the game. Tip the cap. But it's a fluky win. Next night, okay, Orioles are in control from the get-go. Great. They were the better team all night. But guess what? Kyle Gibson overachieved. 6.75 career ERA against the Yankees going into that game. All of a sudden, 7 shutout innings.
I think I was like watching that game, and the way he was throwing his sinker, I was like, the Yankees have no plan for him, and I couldn't necessarily blame him. Like he would, like his sinker was biting hard and it was fast.
That's probably the best his sinker has looked since he was with the Twins, if we're being honest.
I was just sitting there and I was like, you know what? Fair enough. Like that looks unhittable right now.
And let's just be honest with ourselves. Like the Yankees, they are not a team built to hit against sinker ballers. Dylan Lawson stresses, find your ball up in the zone and hit it hard. Now that said, I want to tip the cap to Boone for this decision he made. This was in the walk-off game.
Okay.
This was in the walk-off game. Or was it game two? Okay, it doesn't matter. Yenny or Cano, right? Mm-hmm. Big power sinker out of the Orioles bullpen. He came in and the Yankees, they pinch hit for Jake Bowers for somebody. And I remember saying in the ESNY Slack chat, no, this makes sense. Oh, this was the DJ Bunting game for context.
Oh, yeah.
And you're about to be so proud of me. I said, no. Like, this is why that move made sense, is that Jake Bowers, he's got that longer swing that clears the lower part of the zone. That's who you want against a sinker baller. And look what he did. He like murdered the ball out to center field. But then I explained DJ LeMahieu, he thrives on balls up in the zone. And he does hit a lot of ground balls. So against the power sinker, maybe he did want to try and bunt. But that said, he's a two-time batting champion. What he should have been doing is swinging early to try to get the ball in the air, right?
Yeah.
Look at me. I'm a hitting coach.
There you go. That was a perfect understanding of pitch shape and pitch break versus a guy's swing plane. Proud of you, Josh. Very proud.
Thank you. Sticking with hitting mechanics, how worried should we be about DJ?
I'm a little worried. I never thought he was going to be the AL batting champion again.
Right.
But maybe it was like all the injuries, and also he's getting a little older and that swing is slowing down a bit. But
yeah.
Yeah. There are some times when his approach changes and like his last home run where he hit the right field at Yankee Stadium.
Yes. Against the Padres.
Like that was perfect. Right.
Right.
So sometimes I wonder what he's trying to do at the plate. And I also wonder if he knows what he's trying to do at the plate, because he's always kind of been one of those guys where it's like, all right, just think right center with the hard stuff. And then when you get pitched soft, like you will be early enough to pull it. But sometimes it seems like he moves away from that and he chases after pitches that are inside and gets beat, or he tops too many baseballs and stuff. And
yeah,
you know,
we're,
no, go ahead.
I think that there's reason to be semi-cautiously optimistic on DJ LeMahieu, if only because I looked at his monthly splits from last year. April, he had like 280 in April, which, okay, that was a little much, but then he really regressed in May, came back in June, hit 340 in July, and then got hurt.
Right.
So maybe he's, maybe that's going to have, maybe he'll like, that's going to like get him back on track. I think that middle of the order is where he needs to be, even if he, maybe he's still getting used to that. I think that once with Stanton and Donaldson back in the lineup, having DJ LeMahieu in the middle of it, that's only going to do good things for the team.
Yeah.
You know, it's been an even better move, and I think you'll agree with me on this one. Gleyber Torres as a leadoff man.
I was just about to say, Josh, you were going to be proud of me because I was going to give props to Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, he's having a great month. He's hitting an even 300.
Yeah,
as the leadoff man this year, batting an even cleaner 333 over this 11 game hitting streak. It's like, what's the thing we get on Gleyber all the time, man? It's like, oh, okay, he's a great natural contact hitter. I don't need to beat that dead horse, but he's Pavel Datsyuk with the baseball bat. but he's always trying to hit home runs. Now you have him in the leadoff spot where his literal job is to hit for contact.
Yeah.
It's like, no, okay, you know what? Like, we are going to browbeat this into you. You're the leadoff man. Do not swing for a home run.
Yeah. Yeah, just get on base and let Aaron Judge and everyone else behind you drive you in. Like, set the tone early, and he's in. He's having better approaches. He doesn't look as lost as something like when he's low and not producing. So, yeah, I mean, like he was a beast during the Seattle series. And
you can see, and I want your take on this. Like, because I've noticed this, especially when he goes up the middle with the hit. He's not so worried anymore, it seems, about having a clean swing.
Yeah, I think that's always something that people discredit, and they shouldn't, is, you know, you can be a good hitter and you can be athletic, and it doesn't mean having to be stubborn in one swing, you know? Yeah. Guys like Aaron Judge or whatever, like, they can be stubborn in the one swing because because they're bigger and they know how they're going to generate their power or whatever. But like one guy who I really admire and is really good at this, and I noticed it today because I was watching the game, and he did it to spoil a pretty decent, I think, 2-strike pitch. A guy who's really good at this is Starling Marte.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, you know, again, this is a guy who hit 292 last year in his first season with the Mets. And then he hit in 2021, he hit 310. Like, this is a high contact, high base hit kind of dude who knows how to set the tone at the top of the lineup. He will spoil good pitches. And yeah, there are going to be times he's going to look stupid. But you know what? They don't ask how, they ask how many. And yeah. They're like, you got to have a good understanding of what kind of hitter you want to be. And I think how Torres is hitting right now, this is how he should be all the time. Like,
yeah.
You know, we don't need the 39 home runs he hit as a rookie or second year player. You know,
yeah,
it's like be in the 20 to 25 home run range.
Be not even next, that 15
be
to
the
20.
Next DJ LeMahieu. Be the next DJ.
Yeah, because like Gleyber Torres also, like, if just be the way that he speaks to media, the way he talks about his team. Like, this is a very smart and conscientious guy. He knows his free agency is coming up.
Yeah.
And like, the time is now for him to start upping his value.
Yeah.
Because like, he could plateau the rest of the way, and yeah, he'll get a contract, just not like the contract. Because at that rate, he's probably looking at a hometown discount to stay with the Yankees if they don't trade him. But backtracking, because we talked about Torres, like, the offense as a whole looks pretty good. The Rays should be nervous for several reasons. They're getting hurt. Their bullpen is finally crumbling at the foundation, just like we've predicted a few years ago. Like, I don't want to say it's schadenfreude, Alec, but it's pretty damn close.
You know, they're going to come to a hard place soon, I think. You know, they've kind of steadied out just a bit. And they're keeping pace at the top of the standings for the last like 10 games, or 6-4, which matches the Yankees for the best 10 game sample size. So, but you know, we saw with the Yankees where they got off to such a historic start and then they fell hard in, what was it, June? No.
You're talking about last year?
Yeah. Was it July?
August.
It was August.
Like mid late July into August.
Yeah. So, you know, baseball is a game of averages.
Yep.
And right now, Tampa is playing way above what they should be. And so there's going to be a regression to the mean. And yeah, like you said, it's starting to rear its ugly head. And I, for one, cannot wait. I'm a hater who is preying on their downfall.
So. Yeah, I'm praying for their downfall, but at the same time, I just kind of feel bad for Kevin Cash, because all of the Rays' success of the past 5 or so years, it's because of him. He is the heartbeat of that team. You could probably put Kevin Cash either on the Milwaukee Brewers or on the St. Louis Cardinals probably next year, and within 3 years, he'll have a ring.
I agree.
Yeah, because now you're also seeing how much of the prime Rays, even before Kevin Cash, how much of that was Andrew Friedman, who's now with the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Rays, it's just, I said this last month when I wrote something, I think after the Yankee Stadium series split, that building a division lead early is easy. Maintaining it is way harder. Look at the Yankees last year. They almost coughed it up.
Yeah, I mean, like, they, you know, the age-old adage is you can't win the division in the first month and a half, but you can certainly lose it.
Yep.
Right now, we're at such a time where there's so much parity in the AL East. You can't even, you know, not being able to win it in the first month and a half rings especially true. So the Rays did themselves a favor, no doubt, getting out to such a large lead at a point. But, like, you know, now Baltimore is 4 games behind Tampa, and the Yankees are 6 games behind Tampa. Like, they're, like, teams are closing in on them. And
yeah, and like, I don't think anyone takes the Blue Jays seriously anymore, because we're seeing this year, all right, John Schneider, maybe not completely in over his head, but it's getting pretty close. I'm worried it's kind of spiraling towards there. Like, it's like, I'm sorry, like, you're an ex-catcher, so this will make you mad too. How is it that as an ex-catcher, you forget that the second mound visit means you have to change the pitcher?
Yeah. I mean, like
that was bad, dude.
That was very bad. I mean, like, and you can kind of look at the behavior from him and the rest of the Blue Jays during the Yankees series. There's a little bit of panic in that clubhouse. There is a little bit of frustration where, like you said, it's kind of spiraling a bit, you know?
Yeah, like, who knows what's going on with Alek Manoah?
Yeah, Alek Manoah is a mess. He is my God, he is awful. Like,
not even Max Greenfield knows what happened to him.
You know, I wonder if there is some truth to the pitch clock. And I wonder if this is a warning that for a guy like Manoah, he's got to get into better shape, because it's moving quicker. It's and he's a big guy to begin with, both in weight and size. So you know those factors alone makes it really difficult to replicate your delivery. And so when you have an added time crunch on it, you know, it's the biggest concern is, you know, not the 5.46 ERA. It's the 41 walks and 57 innings.
Yeah, because, like, that makes me think that he's just – I mean, you mentioned the pitch clock. He's probably just getting so winded between pitches that he's probably not even, like, capable of making sure that he's got the right grip on the ball, that his mechanics are right. It's probably, like, all up here.
Yeah, absolutely. We've
kind of seen something similar with Nestor Cortez, who, like, kind of relies so much on deception as opposed to power compared to Manoah. But at the same time, Nestor does now. Nestor's not chubby like Manoah by any stretch of the imagination, but he still kind of has that smaller squatter build where he's kind of got like that absolute minimal belly, we'll call it. Where if you're carrying that early in the season, okay, like with the pitch clock, maybe that's gonna affect you. Whereas because we've seen it this year with Cortez, he can't go through the third time the order anymore. Whereas last year, when he was able to take his time, sort of refocus, reestablish just what he had to do to get the guy out, now it's just, oh, okay, like I'm pitching, like I gotta go. Oh, pitch con, boom, let's go.
Yeah. And that's like, for anyone who doesn't understand what that is like, you know, if you go, like, go to the gym and like push yourself to do a weightlifting exercise where your rest time is very minimal. Yeah. And like, you know, that doesn't mean like go out there and do 5 pounds of X, Y, and Z. It's no, go out there, do as heavy of a weight as you can. Tell yourself to finish that set in a certain time, and then only give yourself like 15 to 20 seconds of rest, and then do it again and feel how tired you're going to get a lot quicker, because you're keeping your heart rate up. Right. So
yeah,
you're kind of more fully engaged with the workout instead of like, okay, I just finished my rep. Now I'm going to sit here for 45 seconds to a minute looking at my phone. All right, now I'm ready to go again and go. It's like, no. And so for pitching like this, it, you know, for a guy like Manoa, absolutely. Yeah. I think that is a leading cause of his struggles.
And even with a hitting drill, like, you probably did this playing in college and in high school, just where the coach has the pitching machine going, has the bucket of balls, goes for it, and guys just go up and take swings, take your swing, back of the line, take your swing, back of the line. The pitches keep getting faster, faster, and faster, and you got to be ready to, like, hey, get there, take your swing.
Yeah.
And, like, if you're not ready for it, too bad, back of the line.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but on the whole, the division, I mean, the Red Sox, they're going to overachieve as long as Alex Cora is in the chair there.
Yeah, but they're not even, like, even them, they kind of have fallen. Like, I know they're a game over 500 right now, but they've lost three in a row.
Well, yeah, but that's still overachieving compared to what was expected of them going into the season.
Yeah, fair.
I mean, Masataka Yoshida's been really good at an absolute minimum.
I know, I dropped him on my fantasy team way too early.
Wah, wah. but coming up, oh, you excited for the Dodger series?
I am. I'm glad that, you know, teams with as much history as the Yankees and Dodgers have, you know, we're going to get to see them again.
That's the thing. Like, I know people are knocking interleague play and how it kind of waters down the product as a whole, but at the same time, so many young fans now, younger casual fans, are going to be exposed to just this rich history that exists between all these teams. And it's like, oh man, like now they get to play each other on the regular, like, and actually rebuild a rivalry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be an interesting matchup though, because hitting wise, the Yankees and the Dodgers are pretty close. They're both kind of in that lower third of the league. But the Yankees this year, they have a top 10 pitching staff. I forget where they're ranked right now, but the Dodgers right now, they're not even top 15. They might not even be top 20. And their staff ERA is 4.46.
Yeah. That's like, so what? They lost Dustin May, right?
They just lost Dustin May. Walker Buehler's out for the season. Arias just went down too. Like, the pitching matchups this week, it's Kershaw's going Friday, and it's two guys I've never heard of, Saturday or Sunday. Saturday and Sunday, rather.
I mean, Kershaw's all right, 3.32 ERA. He's striking out more than a batter per inning. And, you know, and then after that, you got Noah Syndergaard, who's awful.
Oh, Syndergaard's pitching? He wasn't listed last time I checked. That must be new.
He's 1-4 with a 6.54 ERA. I don't know if he's pitching in the series. I'm just looking at their team.
Oh, yeah, no, he's not pitching the series. Oh, as of three minutes ago. Chris Sale exits early versus the Reds.
Uh-oh. He's on my fantasy team, too.
He's been pitching well, too.
Yeah, he has. That's a bummer. I also did an emergency pickup of Tyler Glasnow.
Godspeed.
It's worked out so far.
Yeah. But, And, you know, Kershaw, when he's pitching, the producer's probably going to be in everyone's ear talking about his remarks recently.
What were his remarks?
Oh, he's pissy about the Dodgers doing Pride Night and doesn't like the group that they're like the drag group that they invited.
Jesus.
It's like, I read his remarks. Now Kershaw's record politically, he's okay. He's very pro Black Lives Matter. He does a lot of humanitarian work in Africa with his wife. I'm just starting to wonder if he's just one of these people who's like, yeah, like everything's fine. I just don't personally like religion being made fun of. Like my favorite Anne is the same way. She'll be first in line at a drag show. She'll like watch RuPaul do this, do that, but she just doesn't enjoy jokes about religion. Full stop. Like that's her line.
Yeah. And you know what? That is fair to an extent for sure.
Right. But this whole comments he made, they just screamed like almost pick me in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like pick me, look at me.
Yeah. We don't need to get into the whole theological debate of it all.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunately religion has been weaponized far too often. And
yeah. And I say this is probably one of the few, I guess, millennials who doesn't consider themselves atheists, but it's just, it breaks my heart how they've weaponized it. But anyway, this is Bleacher Creatures, not MSNBC.
Yet. Yeah. Let's please not be MSNBC.
I mean, I don't mind MSNBC, but moving on. But yeah, it's the, how about Boone getting ejected a bunch lately and then suspended for it?
Did you see, like, apparently he's considered a Karen amongst the umpires?
Are you serious?
I saw a report about that, like, umpires are kind of, they have kind of unionized against him. So wait. I'm really interested to know what he says in those ejections, because I feel like he gets personal.
I mean, he does sometimes. God, if they think he's a Karen, I wonder what they think of a David Bell.
Yeah, right. But you know what? It's the state of umpiring is not good.
It is not. It is not. And
they don't want to be screamed at. Well, you know what? Be better.
Do your job better. Yeah.
They're going to lose their jobs because they're so bad at it.
Yeah. This seems like a good way to close the show. Clay Holmes finally seems like himself again.
Yeah, I mean, we say that now until, you know, he has a hard time with that sinker in a week.
Yeah, I mean, that's another guy with pitch clock. You got to wonder, like, maybe just because his sinker is so intricate and unique on its own, maybe, like, that's why he's losing control of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a big-time, lively arm. We were spoiled with a guy like Mariano for as long as we were.
We really were. And that creepy pedophile John Wetland before him.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Forgot about him.
Yeah, let's keep it that way.
This is the modern game. Like, this is how it is. That's the great thing is, you know, when Clay Holmes struggles, it's not a problem unique only to the Yankees. Every team is going to go through it.
Yeah. You know, well, and then meanwhile, Wandy Peralta just has absolute ice water in his veins.
Yeah. Pearl. What a guy. What a character.
Dio Wandy.
Hey, we're getting Canely back, so that's going
to
be interesting.
I'm so excited for Tommy Canely to come back just for the sheer ridiculousness. Like, I'm curious to see what his pro wrestling theme is going to be this year coming out of the bullpen.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's going to be like an Undertaker theme.
Nah, I don't know if it'll be Undertaker. Maybe if like as a back from the dead theme. Oh, yeah. Good point.
So.
Either way, it's considering how it's June 1st, the Yankees, they're not in the best position, but like the group chat certainly isn't as angry as we think it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's also because like, experience has taught me to temper expectations with the Yankees. And after getting burned as bad as I did with the Rangers, I've gone numb inside to personal sports.
Yeah. Well, now you know how I feel about the Knicks.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's and I'll tell you what, it's liberating. It's free. I don't let the Yankees control my emotions.
Speaking of emotions, this is a great way to, this is actually the perfect way to close the show tonight. Did you watch the Ted Lasso finale?
You know what's funny?
Yeah.
I was in the middle of watching it and then 8:15 came around. Like, I gotta go up and do the podcast.
So oh man, get
ready. My
girlfriend
and her sister finished the episode downstairs.
I am so sorry.
I walked out, I think, right around halftime of the game. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
God, what are we going to watch now that Ted Lasso is over? God help us.
Yeah. nothing's going to provide such warmth.
Yeah. You know what? We're going to formally close the show with this. Garrett Cole, we talk about 10 starts where you have everything, 10 where you have nothing, 10 where you improvise. Gerrit Cole, I mean, there's been a couple starts where it's looked like he's had nothing. Then he kind of like finds it. Then he has nothing again. Max doesn't seem to be too worried about him. Says like, oh, he's so close to figuring it out, which I'm inclined to agree. But I do not like watching Gerrit Cole pitch badly. Like it's disheartening.
Yeah. He's very mercurial, if you think about it. Very kind of just, you know, yeah, one day he'll look like the guy he looked like in Houston, and then the other day he'll look like the guy he was in Pittsburgh. And, you know, it's...
I have a feeling that he's going to do things to the Dodgers, to say the least.
I hope so.
Because apparently his wife's family all despise the Dodgers.
Well, that makes sense because his wife's brother is Brandon Crawford. Oh, no. Crawford's married to his sister, right?
No. Cole's wife, Amy, is Brandon's sister.
Right. So it makes sense.
Yeah. It makes sense. I just thought it was really funny how when he was talking about his free agency, someone apparently asked him, oh, so the Dodgers were never part of the conversation. He goes, No, Amy doesn't like the Dodgers.
Fair enough. You know, we're gonna have to deal with the fact that they're gonna get Shohei Ohtani at the end of the season. So,
I don't mind the Dodgers getting. I don't care where Shohei Ohtani ends up as long as he stays away from the Red Sox.
No, he won't go to Boston.
Nah, you kidding me?
I wouldn't mind him in Seattle.
That would be fun. Him in Seattle.
Following his hero's footsteps.
Yeah, that would be cool. Even him on the Mets would be a fun instance.
Just because he'll be in New York, but yeah, I wouldn't be able to. It's bad enough that they have Pete Alonso.
God. Oh, Mets Twitter. Don't encourage them. All right, folks. Well, thanks for your patience and coming back with us. Announcement, starting next week and every other week while he's available, James Kelly is going to be on the show with us. He will be joining us for his Yankees takes, and we will be making fun of him for his taste in Girl Scout cookies, TV shows, among other things. But yeah, it's gonna be a good summer, man. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too.
Are you even excited for when Saquon Barkley is eventually traded?
You know, at this point, I've completely forgotten about that situation. I don't know what he's trying to do because I thought the offers the Giants have made towards him were completely fair.
They were.
You know, like, I don't know what he's wanting or waiting for, but, you know, it's disappointing. But, yeah. Again, the Giants, their issue lies beyond just, like, you know, Saquon Barkley. Like, if they lost Saquon Barkley, does it really move the needle for them one way or the other?
Absolutely not.
Because they still have to fix that offensive line and get a receiver, and
yeah. Well, you drafted a receiver.
Yeah, that's true. But so again, like I'm out of touch with kind of football in general because like the idea of me thinking because like what they got the receiver in the third round.
No, I think Jalen Hyatt was their one.
Was he their one?
Yeah.
So but even then, in football, the idea of like relying on your first round draft pick immediately is kind of like asinine. Like you kind of get in hockey depending on the player. Like when the Blackhawks get Connor Bedard, like you know what that's going to be. But like
speaking of the Blackhawks, Patrick Kane out 4 to 6 months after hip surgery.
Oh, absolutely. We'll see where he ends up being.
The Rangers might re-up him on like a 1 year. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Yeah, re-up on him and then put him on the LTIR. You know, stash his cap away for a bit and then figure it out.
Yeah, let him sit till like Christmas and bring him back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? With the Giants, it's even with Saquon, they're going to have a hard time in the division just because the Eagles are the Eagles and the Cowboys are just better constructed. Saquon ends up getting traded, whatever.
All right. And
the Giants did all they could.
They really did. All right, folks. We will see you next week for Bleacher Creatures. James Kelly will be with us. We will be discussing the Yankees mid-White Sox series. We'll recap the Dodgers. And coming up next weekend, the first Red Sox series of the season.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think James is going to the Friday night game, actually. Anyway, we will talk about that next week. Thanks for listening, folks. Enjoy the games.